Thanks for joining Sap Alone Nerds, a coastal science podcast. I'm your host, Corinne.
And I'm your host, Brittany. And we work at the National Estuarine Research Reserve, or NEAR, on Sapelo Island, a Georgia barrier island.
For today's episode, we'd like to start by thanking our listeners for your patience, since we were a few days late in posting this episode.
Our hurricanes episode was aptly timed, since our big concern before this episode was Hurricane Ian. We were incredibly fortunate on Sapelo and along Georgia's coast that the storm traveled pretty far offshore after leaving Florida and before returning to the Carolinas. Our thoughts go out to all of those that were impacted by this massive storm.
Absolutely. After one of our sister NEAR sites, Hobos Bay in Puerto Rico, took some damage during Hurricane Fiona, the NEAR's and Ian's tracks were a bit on edge. But fortunately, the GTM Reserve in St. Augustine, Ace Basin NEAR, and North Inlet Winyah Bay NEAR in South Carolina, and even Rookery Bay just south of Naples didn't suffer any major damage. All of us here at SciNEAR hope that those who were impacted by recent hurricanes have a speedy recovery.
Well, Brittany, since we spent a lot of time trying to track Ian, I thought we could talk about some other tracking we do in the fall.
Are you going to have us get lost in the woods tracking animals?
No, of course not. Not again. No, I'm talking about tracking animal migrations. There are a bunch of really neat animals traveling south this time of year.
You know, I have noticed tons of butterflies hanging around our native gardens. Are they migrating right now?
They are. If you spend time along the Georgia coast in the fall, you may know that we get a ton of butterfly activity in September and October. One of the species I notice the most are Gulf fritillaries. These orange and black butterflies are smaller than the more well-known monarchs and have a large silvery-white patch on the underside of their wings. But they aren't the only migrating butterfly species.
That's right. There's actually a study finishing up this year on some of our neighboring barrier islands to learn more about which butterfly species travel along the Atlantic coast. This study is called the Butterflies of the Atlantic Flyaway Alliance, or BAFA. BAFA has been a 5-year study to learn approximately how many butterflies migrate, if that number varies from year to year, and which coastal habitats and plant species provide nectar to refuel or areas to roost.
This is a really interesting study that includes partners such as the St. Catharines Island Foundation, the Jekyll Island Authority, the St. Simons Land Trust, and Georgia DNR. The three main butterfly species for this study are Gulf fritillaries, monarchs, and the cloudless sulfurs, which are a pretty pale yellow color. While observing which habitats and nectar plants are important for migrations, citizen scientists in this study also looked for several other butterfly species, American ladies, painted ladies, common buckeyes, and long-tailed skippers.
But butterflies aren't the only animals migrating right now. We also have a lot of birds heading south for the winter. It's a great time to look for warblers, vireos, thrushes, and tanagers.
I'll admit, I'm not a great birder, but I do enjoy noticing all of the different birds around and seeing if I can figure out what they are. If you're interested in learning more about the birds around you, there are a ton of great birding field guides, and there are apps for phones, too. Some of my favorites are Merlin Bird ID from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, Smart Bird ID, and Audubon Bird Guide. There are some amazing locations along the coast to look for birds. Check out the Colonial Coast Birding Trail, which offers 17 sites across 122 miles of the Georgia coast. About 75% of the bird species reported in Georgia have been seen on this trail. You can find more details on DNR's Go Outdoors Georgia app, linked in the description.
Of course, one of the best ways to learn about birding is to learn from a local birder. You can look into joining an Audubon chapter near you. Around Sapelo, there's the Ogeechee Audubon chapter near Savannah, the Coastal Audubon chapter, or the statewide Georgia Audubon. Another great opportunity is to visit or volunteer at JIBS, the Jekyll Island Banding Station.
JIBS is a great place to learn about migrating birds. This bird banding station started in 1978 and has been operating every fall since to band and learn more about traveling songbirds. Evan and Heather Pittman currently head the operation with many volunteers. They set up mist nets that birds cannot see on the south end of Jekyll Island. When a bird gets tangled in the nets, the JIBS crew carefully extracts it, takes measurements, and identifies the species, age, and gender of the bird before attaching a serially numbered leg band and letting it go unharmed.
JIBS just started their fall sampling for 2022 and caught 87 birds in their first day, which includes 17 different species. You can look for Jibs on Facebook to see updates and photos of the birds that they are working on throughout the month of October. One thing the Jibs crew has noticed throughout the years of sampling is a big reduction in the number of birds they are seeing. In the 80s and 90s, Jibs would band 2,000 to 3,000 birds. Now, it's only about half that.
These big migrations are not easy for birds or the butterflies we discussed earlier. The good news is that there are things you can do at home to help protect these animals. We have a few tips to help with migrations. First is to help make sure these critters have fuel for their journey by planting native gardens.
Yes, Doug Tallamy's book, Nature's Best Hope, gives great suggestions for how landowners can make an impact in the world's declining biodiversity by planting native plants around the home. Insects and birds need that natural food source in the correct time of year to ensure successful migration. Native plants provide these essential nutrients when migrating species need it most, and without those, many species could be lost. Many species evolved their migration paths based on the available native plants in the area, and by upsetting that balance with ornamental or invasive plants in your yard, animals are struggling to find food sources along their migratory routes. By following Ptolemy's lead, you can turn your yard into a conservation corridor that provides habitat for various species. You can even become part of the homegrown national park movement, which is the largest cooperative conservation project ever conceived or attempted, with a goal to convert 20 million acres of private lands like your own yard into a native habitat.
I need to keep working on my green thumb for this. Don't worry if you're not sure where to start. Look for a native plant nursery near you and do some research on what plants are important for animals in your area. You can check audubon.org/native plants to search for which plants are important to birds in your zip code. You can also use the National Wildlife Federation's Native Plant Finder to look for plants to build your garden.
So having good food sources through native plants is important, but there are other ways for you to protect migrating species as well, particularly when it comes to windows.
Absolutely. The windows on homes and businesses are incredibly dangerous to migrating birds. Birds don't recognize that windows are even there when they either show reflections during the day or look like clear paths into empty offices at night, and the birds continue flying at full speed, thinking they are on a safe flight path. Some estimates suggest up to 1 billion birds are killed by window strikes each year.
The good news is that we can help these birds. There are many products on the market that you can put on windows to make them more visible to birds. For example, you can hang streamers or ribbons, use tape to create patterns, or use decorative or perforated window films. You can also hang a window screen to soften collision, or use paint, soap, or white markers to make a window visible to birds.
Those are all great and simple solutions for day collisions. For nighttime collisions, you can join the Lights Out movement. Lights Out is a voluntary movement to minimize the number of birds hitting windows, particularly in cities. The first Audubon Lights Out program began in Chicago in 1999 to not only minimize window collisions, but also to reduce confusion for birds that migrate at night using the light from stars to guide their way. Essentially, rather than leaving building lights on overnight, Lights Out participants turn lights off from midnight to sunrise.
And it's not even year-round. This movement focuses on the spring and fall migrations and provides benefits to businesses and homeowners as well. Participants will save money on energy bills, reduce energy waste, and be more eco-friendly. This helps business follow sustainability guidelines. Simply turning off lights can have a huge impact. One building in Chicago saw an 80% decrease in bird collision-related mortality.
We'll share a link in the show notes for Georgia Audubon's Lights Out Georgia page. Check it out and take the pledge. Big cities pose the largest risk, with Atlanta being the fourth most dangerous city for migrating birds in the fall. So share with any friends that might be able to help minimize this risk.
One other tip we have for helping animals survive their fall migrations is to bring in any outdoor cats. I know this can be hard since my mom has had cats who love to be outside and would sneak through doors in a heartbeat. However, the cost of having an outdoor cat is about 2.4 billion bird deaths a year. That's a staggering number, especially when you see it in a visual diagram, which one artist did for National Geographic. You can check out the full story at our link in the description. It makes a big impact to see how much damage one cat can have on a local ecosystem. They can be so damaging that cats have contributed to the extinction of 63 species of birds, mammals, and reptiles.
It can be a challenge to bring outdoor cats inside, but the first step is to make sure any cats outside your home are spayed or neutered. If you can, try to get feral cats in your neighborhood spayed or neutered as well to reduce wild cat populations. Then slowly transition your outdoor cats to indoors by feeding them inside, introducing them to a litter box and scratching posts, and giving them plenty of toys and things to do indoors.
It may be a slow process and a little frustrating, but it can have a huge impact and bring you hours of joy getting to watch all the migratory species travel safely through your yard.
So, Brittany, how do birds and butterflies make these big migrations?
Well, obviously, they wing it.
Well, do you know why one side is longer when geese are flying in a V?
No, I don't know. Why?
Because there's more geese on that side.
Time for a real question. David from Bryan County asks, how long do monarch butterflies live if they take over 8 months to migrate? I thought most butterflies only lived a few weeks as an adult.
That is a great question. Monarchs' lifespan depends on when they are born. In the summer, adults only live about 2 to 6 weeks. The ones that migrate, however, can live several months, typically from August to April, as adults. They are known as the super generation and undergo reproductive diapause. Since they are traveling from northeastern U.S. and Canada to Mexico for overwintering, they do not fully mature before migration and therefore live longer. When they reach Mexico, they begin to mature and breed. These eggs will then hatch into the first generation of returning adults who start to make their way back north. The eggs that generation laid will continue that journey until the next super generation is born again in August or September. For more information about any of the topics we covered today, or to submit your question that may be featured in our upcoming episodes, please email us at signer.socials@gmail.com. That's signer.socials@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening to Sapelo Nerds, a coastal science podcast brought to you by the Sapelo Island National Estuarine Research Reserve. Please check back for more episodes released on the 1st and the 15th of each month.
And that's the Sapelo Sound.